This is Director Laurie Duran with the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, welcoming you to the latest episode of Intelligence Unclassified, a podcast about counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and resiliency. Join us as we tap into local, national, and world-renowned experts to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and to give you a greater perspective on the current trends and challenges facing our great state. If this is your first time listening, we're happy to have you. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, njohsp.gov.
Hello, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 1 of Intelligence Unclassified. My name is Matt, and I'm joined today with my fellow analysts, Christine, Casey, and Jen. In today's episode, we will be going over our recently released 2022 New Jersey Terrorism Threat Assessment. So to kick it off, we're going over to Christine with our domestic terrorism section. So Christine, can you just quickly define what domestic terrorism is and then what groups and ideologies fall under that domestic terrorism umbrella?
Sure, Matt. So our office, how we define domestic terrorism is violence committed by individuals or groups that are associated primarily with U.S.-based movements. So now this would be considered anti-government, race-based, religious, and single-issue extremist ideologies.
So moving into 2022, what do you assess the threats from these different domestic extremists will be? And then how is this threat landscape different than what we've seen previously?
All right. So what our office assesses that domestic extremists are going to likely return to pre-pandemic operating norms, more so shifting their focus towards local expansion, participating in demonstrations and rallies, and engaging in more so low-level type criminal activity. So over the last 2 years, we saw domestic extremists leveraging multiple national events to mobilize and justify violence throughout the United States. So we saw that domestic extremists were capitalizing on wide-ranging anti-government sentiment to further their respective movements based on the U.S. government's response to the COVID pandemic, the 2020 presidential election, and the nationwide civil unrest. So now when we're looking outside of domestic extremist attacks that are currently listed in our threat assessment, there's been more than 300 individuals that were charged since May of 2020 for crimes committed adjacent to or under the guise of peaceful demonstrations, including from the state of New Jersey. So to date now, federal charges have been filed alleging crimes that include attempted murder, assaulting a law enforcement officer, and a multitude of other crimes. So in several of these instances, these individuals were leveraging social media platforms to incite destruction and assaults against law enforcement officers. So now when we take a look at the U.S. Capitol insurrection on January 6th, the total number of federal cases against individuals involved stands at over 700. So nationally, individuals came from 46 states and the District of Columbia. Charges were filed against 26 individuals from New Jersey, and most of these individuals we found were unaffiliated with a set group or ideology.
So looking at the terrorism threat assessment, I see that there are threat rankings listed there, all within a high, moderate, or low category. So when it comes to the domestic extremism side, I see that white racially motivated extremists are listed as a high threat for this upcoming year. So why exactly is that? And what do you assess they will be doing moving into the upcoming year?
All right, let's first go over how we define white racially motivated extremists. So they advocate for the advancement of the white race over all others and believe that violence or criminal activity is justified to further their ideology. So the threat from white racially motivated extremists has evolved over the last 5 years. So we see that they're, you know, likely going to continue organizing and operating as small cells or groups that kind of fall under this separate national banner. The primary tactic they would use would be propaganda distribution throughout the state to spread their ideology and recruit new members. And accelerationist type groups will likely attempt to establish these stronger ties within the state while also stockpiling weapons and tactical equipment. So more specific now with New Jersey-based white racially motivated extremists, it's likely that they'll communicate online and travel across state lines to engage in tactical training or participate in rallies. So nationwide, we've seen supporters of this ideology that have demonstrated their willingness and capability to coordinate and network globally, as well as directing and inspiring sympathizers online.
Great. Thank you, Christine. I have one more question when it comes to the domestic extremism section. I see here listed you have a term called blended extremism. When looking at past New Jersey terrorism threat assessments, I haven't seen this listed before. What exactly is blended extremism and how does it play a role in the overall domestic extremist landscape?
Okay, so over the last decade, we've seen extremists leveraging the belief systems of multiple domestic extremist and foreign terrorist organizations, which include tailoring these systems to develop and ultimately form unique radical worldviews that advance the individual's violent goals. So these extremists use this whole ideological convergence to justify violence against shared targets or for guidance while using common tactics. So this would include attack methods, recruitment strategies, and propaganda distribution. So this whole phenomenon, coupled with the availability of numerous social media platforms, creates this whole unique security challenge for law enforcement. Now, looking at a specific recent example of this, in June 2020, federal authorities charged Ethan Melzer with planning an attack on his U.S. Army unit and sharing sensitive details with a neo-Nazi and white racially motivated extremist group. So Melzer had associated with the group that combines views of Nazis and Islamic extremists as well, and was also consuming propaganda from various white racially motivated groups and ISIS.
Great. Thank you, Christine, for going over the domestic extremism section. Transitioning now over to our homegrown violent extremist and international terrorism section, I'm going to pass it over to Casey. So Casey, starting off with homegrown violent extremist, can you just quickly define what that is for our listeners?
Sure, Matt. So a homegrown violent extremist, or HVE, as we tend to refer to them, is an individual who is inspired as opposed to immediately directed by a foreign terrorist organization. And these individuals are typically radicalized in the country in which they are born, raised, or reside in.
So just like white racially motivated extremists, I see that they are listed as a high threat coming into 2022. So exactly why is that?
Well, HVEs have been a high threat for the last few years, really, for a variety of different reasons. Typically, they are driven to conduct attacks domestically. They provide financial support or attempts to travel overseas to fight on behalf of foreign terrorist organizations. And we've seen a few examples of these types of behavior in 2021. So back in January, an active duty soldier was arrested for attempting to provide tactical guidance to an undercover FBI employee who he believed was a member of ISIS. And he had hoped that that information that he was going to be providing would eventually lead to an attack. We also see that if HVEs can't actively plot an attack, they will often resort to providing material support to foreign terrorist organizations. An example of that was back in March when we had an individual arrested for providing material support after he led a pro-ISIS media group, which translated official ISIS material into English, and then he attempted to provide those materials to an undercover FBI agent, hoping eventually that ISIS would be able to use the content. Lastly, HVEs also tend to travel overseas sometimes to just outright join FTOs. An example of that would be in March as well, we saw a New York couple who was arrested in Newark as they were attempting to board a cargo ship to travel to Yemen to fight for ISIS. And now this really isn't an exhaustive list of incidents, but it does kind of help highlight the different reasons HVEs are continually a high threat.
It really seems like a lot of times homegrown violent extremists and foreign terrorist organizations are maybe not directly connected, but they do have a lot of connections with each other. So with that being said, what do you assess the threat from foreign terrorist organizations to be? And then how are they going to remain committed to inspiring supporters such as homegrown violent extremists here in the U.S.?
So FTOs are likely going to pose a low threat to New Jersey. However, they do remain dedicated to combating the United States, as well as exploiting global events, kind of in order to better encourage homegrown violent extremists to kind of bring the fight back to the U.S. or to support their efforts overseas. And we saw this a few times in 2021. Both ISIS and Al-Qaeda released propaganda online, typically either through videos or magazines, where they capitalized on current events and used them to promote violence and inspire supporters. So as examples, in November, Al-Qaeda released a video affirming that the U.S. is the number one enemy of Islam. And then back in April, they used the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan as an opportunity to kind of tout their alleged victory, smear the U.S., and then kind of generally state that the war against the U.S. would be continuing on all other fronts, regardless of what was happening in Afghanistan. In September, ISIS really kind of followed suit as well and pushed out similar propaganda, encouraging supporters to, quote unquote, continue their incitement, and then alleged that their continued violent rhetoric has really inspired lone wolf attacks in America. This is pretty typical of foreign terrorist organizations, but their rhetoric is consumed by HVEs online, and so it's kind of prudent to be aware of what they are typically putting out. Overall, though, FTOs promote predominantly ISIS and Al-Qaeda have really lost their foothold in the Middle East, and they've seen their influence wane as a result. So their threat to the nation directly and the state as well comes really in the form of HVEs who commit violence in their name. So that being said, they do continue to push out propaganda to encourage supporters. However, despite the fact that we list them as a low threat, that does not necessarily mean no threat. And so it's still kind of important to continue being vigilant in regards to foreign terrorist organizations, especially how they say things and what they say and what they publish over the internet, which in turn tends to influence HVEs.
Great. Thank you, Casey. So one of the things I heard from both you and Christine was that really both HVEs and domestic extremists tend to use the internet a lot, either to communicate or to push out their rhetoric or justify their ideology. So with that being said, transitioning over to Jen, how exactly do extremists leverage social media?
Sure. So we have seen extremists exploit both encrypted messaging platforms and alternative social media applications such as Telegram, Parler, and Gab, to amplify their rhetoric, communicate and coordinate with like-minded individuals, and maintain followers across platforms. So these platforms are appealing to extremists as they offer increased encryption and less content moderation than their mainstream counterparts, which allows them to post a bit more freely and operate a little more anonymously online. I would like to note that the use of these platforms does not inherently indicate extremism, but extremists can exploit them for their functionality.
One more question I have for there is I see in the section that covers the internet use and social media content, there's something called targeted social media content. Can you just quickly go over this for our readers and give it a little bit of explanation of what this is?
Absolutely. So social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter use algorithms that promote and target content to a user that it believes the person is interested in. So they do this by providing content that is similar to what they have interacted with previously, whether it be sharing a post online, liking it, or commenting on it. The content can also be targeted to a person based on their demographic and behavioral data. So for example, if a person shares that they're into fitness and work out a lot, follow fitness accounts, or interact with fitness-based posts, they may be seeing a lot more of this content and ads geared toward this passion. This also applies to extremism. So if someone is engaging with extremist propaganda online, the algorithm will filter more of this content to them, furthering their radicalization.
Great. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Christine and Casey, for going over our recent release 2022 New Jersey Terrorism Threat Assessment. For our listeners out there, it is available online at njohsp.gov. If you'd like to go over and read it and see some of the stuff we talked about and a little bit more of the other parts of the threat assessment we weren't able to cover today. Again, this is Season 6, Episode 1 of Intelligence Unclassified. Thank you all for listening. NJOHSP signing off.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website, njohsp.gov. If you'd like to pitch an idea for a future episode, email us at communications@njohsp.gov. Thanks again for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.